So rivers are always iconic. They're highly charged symbols of our lives, of life, of cities. Of course, ancient cities, we no longer are forced to live alongside of rivers because we can transport water to different locations. We aren't as dependent upon the river life bed as a source of sustenance. But living by rivers, pitching your tent by a river, visiting a river. Of course, as Jews, even in the modern context, we visit a river or a body of water which evokes a river during Tashlich to appoint and anoint HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the real reason for Tashlich, not to throw our sins to fish, but to demonstrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malchus by a river. And rivers in Gan Eden are even more iconic. The four rivers of Gan Eden. But careful readers every year read the four rivers and are left a little bit uneasy, a little bit confused. I'll ask the question in an audacious way. Who cares? Where are these rivers? We don't really know where these rivers are. Some have tried to prove archaeologically where the rivers are. And of course, if you can prove where the source of those rivers are, you can identify Gan Eden. But of course, we can't identify Gan Eden, and by extension, it's really difficult for us to try to identify the sources of those rivers. So why is the Torah describing them? And more interestingly, why is the Torah describing them with such detail, names and countries and details about those countries? And it's even more ironic because we have rivers that serve important functions in our world, the large rivers of Europe. Obviously, people are listening to it in different locations, but the Danube River and the Thames River and other famous rivers that have changed human experience and have influenced history. Of course, we live in Europe, so we're more focused on those rivers, and the Thames isn't really even such a large or big river, but rivers such as the Volga River, the Amazon River, or the Nile, these are rivers that have shaped and reshaped human experience, the Congo River, and these rivers are far, seem to far outpace these four mysterious rivers that no one really knows where they exist. Why is the Torah bothering us with rivers that we can't trace and rivers? So this is the perspective of the Netziv. And I'd like to start to talk about the Netziv this year a little bit, give a sense of who he was and some of the things he articulated, some of the ideas he distilled, and how they related to his period, because he really was very much a product of his period, early to middle part of the 19th century, really the latter part of the 19th century, Vilna Yeshiva, one of the great forces in the Vilna Yeshiva. He, of course, feels the rivers are metaphoric, and they refer to rewards that are offered to four different types of people for four different types of lifestyles. But what's interesting about it is that these four rivers and these four rewards for proper lives and virtuous and noble lives all predate Har Sinai. None of these rivers are referring to people who keep Torah, who adhere to mitzvot, who study Hashem's word. That's obvious. All those rewards are outlined after Parshas Yisro, after Matan Torah. This is a more universal, and therefore it applies to Jew and non-Jew alike, and I'll try to mention towards the end of this year how that's conveyed. There are four typecasts, there are four prototypes, there are four profiles of good lives, and each life merits we would call a substandard but important reward. The highest reward is to ascend and to engage eternally with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina, and that's beyond Gan Eden, and that's beyond whatever opportunities the ideal lifestyle in Gan Eden offer. That he refers to as Tzror HaChayim, the bundle of life, the encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The other places he refers to it as Merkava, obviously on this earth. But there are still people who may not reach that Tzror HaChayim, who live just lives, noble lives, virtuous lives, lives of meaning, and they also receive rewards. So what are these four categories? Who do they apply to? And what type of reward can these people anticipate? So the first one in the first river is the river called Pishon. And the river Pishon circumvents the land of Chavilah. And in the land of Chavilah there is gold. And that gold is called good. Shema achad Pishon, hu asovev es kol eretz haChavilah, asher sham hazahav, hu zahav haaretz ahitov. What's riveting about this Nitziv is that he doesn't just describe the four rivers in general terms as corresponding to four general types of lives, but the details, the geography, the geotext, the location, the gold, each of these details possesses metaphoric meaning, metaphoric messages. So the word Pishon stems from a pasuk in Malachi. The pasuk in Malachi talks about the steeds, the parashav of the custom that were so fast and they galloped. So the river Pishon evokes galloping, success, movement, prosperity. He doesn't talk about it, he just quotes the pasuk in Malachi, but I'm assuming this is what he refers to. People who live moral lives. They're regular, average landowners, businessmen, people of the world, but they're moral, they're ethical, they deliver tzedakah, chesed, Jews, non-Jews, not because of a divine command, because of an inner, innate nobility of the human spirit. Their schar is in this world, or in Gan Eden Tachton, either in our world or in Gan Eden Tachton, not Tzur HaChaim, of course. And their reward is zahav, is prosperity. Now what's interesting is that the Nitziv completely sidesteps the issue of how many righteous people suffer, but at least in theory we can expect in a normal world, a world that's aligned properly, maybe we live in a world of Hester Punim, but in the perfect world, a just, meritorious life of nobility, kindness, charity, philanthropy, morality, ethics, is gold. Now, is this the ultimate reward? Of course not. Is this the Tzur HaChaim? Probably not. Where will this emerge? Probably even in this world, not in Gan Eden. So that's why the Torah qualifies it. Zahav, haaretz ahitov. It's tov. It's not surpassing. It's not eternal. It isn't described in superseding language. It's just tov. It's proper. It's appropriate. But this is the simple level, the level of Pishon, the category of people who live their lives. They succeed. There's movement. They're munificent. They're philanthropic. They receive tov. He talks about the word chavila, but I'll skip that because it's only marginally related. The next river is Gihon. Gihon sounds, at least to the Nitziv, like gachon. Gachon is a belly. And certainly the belly is, in Sefer Bereishis or Parshas Bereishis, is the belly of a snake that is downtrodden, that slithers on its belly, whose legs have been removed. So it's low, it's subjugated, it's subordinate. And according to the Nitziv, this refers to people who live their lives as subordinates. Now, interesting for the Nitziv, in the middle of the 19th century, classes and class systems and hierarchies and social hierarchies and gender hierarchies were very much a part of reality. So saying subordinate, there were clear and obvious people who were subordinate to noblemen and subordinate to aristocrats and subordinate to others. These were children, of course, but women. These were, in his mind, slaves. And that's why this river, the river of Gihon, circumvents the land of Cush. Cush, for the Nitziv, is Africa. Cush, for the Nitziv, are, as we would call them, Africans. Again, in Tanakh, they're called blacks. And today, using the word black is hurtful and is insulting. But in the 19th century, it isn't. And certainly, everything the Nitziv lived through in his day had seen centuries and centuries of slavery and subordinate identity being associated with black people. So the land of Cush is the land that hosts this river. But what's interesting, if we sort of try to modernize it into a world without class systems, thank God, without slavery, thank God, without people of black skin color being discriminated against, thank God. But there are people who, unfortunately, maybe because of their fate in life, because of their psychology, because of their position, they live as subordinates. They're not able to deliver charity, they're not able to be performers of kind and good deeds, they're not going to fall into some of the other categories we'll describe, but they just fill their roles and they live their lives assiduously and honestly and loyally. And he writes that these people as well, they'll receive, doesn't say what their reward will be, but at least it's describing that they will receive, again, not the highest reward of Tzur HaChaim, but they'll receive compensation for a life well-lived, and perhaps a life well-lived within their station, which again resonates with class ideology of the 19th century, that you are born into your position, you're born into your rank, and your responsibility to your God, your religious responsibility, is to faithfully dispense your services. And this isn't a world of upward mobility. This isn't a world in which you can change your class. This is a world in which if you're a slave, you'll forever remain a slave. And therefore, many would say, well, you're an underling, and you're not part of God's plan, and there's no reward for you, and you may not even have a soul, or your soul. But for the Nitziv, people of that nature, whether it's in the 19th century in a specific class designation or in the 21st century who may not be capable of more, if you live your station appropriately, then you receive the reward of the Nahar of Gihon, which the Torah doesn't describe. Interesting, he doesn't discuss why. The third river is called Chidekel, and that third river, people of leadership. Chidekel, Chazal already see, is a conjugation of Chad Vikal. Chidekel, Chad, smart, sharp, wise, clairvoyant, see the future, understand reality. Chad Vikal, industrious, diligent, hard work, successful, efficient. Chad Vikal, light, quick, the movement of Chidekel, the river that moves very quickly, that makes a lot of sound. That's what I'll say, made a lot of sound. And if they lead properly and their leadership is not self-serving and their leadership is to service other people, building projects, advancing humanity, that's also a life. And of course, these profiles are not mutually exclusive. People in their lives can experience all three or all four of these rivers. But when the Torah describes the Chidekel, it tells us that it followed the land of Ashur, but it didn't really, at least the way the Torah describes it, it didn't enervate, it didn't penetrate the land of Ashur, it circumvented the borders of Ashur. The Shem HaNar HaShlashi Chidekel Hu HaOlech Kidmas Ashur, to the front, maybe the north. It's hard to know what Kedem in Tanakh normally means, east, maybe the east of Ashur. Either way, it's on the boundaries of Ashur. Because Ashur sounds a lot like Osher. Osher means happiness, but it also means prestige. It also means recognition. And leaders in our world receive prestige and recognition. But of course, once they receive prestige and recognition, that can significantly compromise the purity of their motive and the purity of their intent. That's the great challenge of leadership. So you become a leader and you contribute to human prosperity, human welfare, and then people take notice. And then you're given a position of prestige and power. And then at some point it becomes just advancing your own power, not always serving other people selflessly, anonymously, modestly. So there's a moral lesson embedded in this river, that Kidmas Ashur, before public opinion, before public approval, before prestige, before popularity, before the accolades and the applause of society, the events that you perform either before you receive public praise, or even after you receive public praise, but you're no longer influenced by it, you're still in a state of Kidmas Ashur, then you'll receive that river of Gan Eden. And the fourth river is Pras. And the fourth river is not just for people who are charitable and ethical at a base level, or for people who serve their station loyally and honestly, or for people who leap above that second layer and lead others, but for people who perform mitzvos, people who perform Maisin Tovim, but not yet because of Har Sinai, not because of some higher spiritual invitation or mandate, because that would be Tzur HaChaim, that wouldn't be one of the four rivers of Gan Eden offering reward. These are people who understand that this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's general will, the way he created man. And there's a bit of a dichotomy here, because on the one hand, this is categorically different from the others, and that's why the river isn't referred to as Shem HaNahar, All three other rivers are introduced with Shem Ha'echad Pishon, Shem Ha'nahar Sheni Gichon, Shem Ha'nahar Shlashi Chidekel. But Pras, it just has four words. Vanahar Harvi, who Pras. Pras comes from the word pray or ve, multiply, produce, Tara, Meisim Tovim. So it's different, and the Nativ does acknowledge that people of this type can reach Tzror HaChaim, so that's why it isn't a river, it's more a condition. All the others are rivers because they're situated geographically in Gan Eden, and they're not as transcendent, they're not as surpassing as what the Nativ refers to as Tzror HaChaim, being engaged with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is Tzror HaChaim for people that live that life, but it isn't specifically for Jews, because that would be Har Sinai, and we're not yet in Har Sinai, and that's why this river is not just not introduced with the same fanfare as the other Gan Eden landed rivers, but we don't even know where this river flows. The first river flows through Eretz HaChavilah, where there's gold. The second river flows through Eretz Cush, the land of the Africans. The third river flows near Ashur. The fourth river, which Chazal traced to Eretz Yisrael, and the Nativ is aware of this tracing, but the Torah doesn't tag it to Eretz Yisrael. It just introduces Naharvi Hupras. It just doesn't say shame. Naharvi Hupras. It's a river. Don't confuse this with Peiresh Samach, which is Pras. It's a river that evokes people who produce Torah or mitzvahs. They don't just live their lives ethically. They don't just serve their station loyally. They don't just lead humanity. But they produce religious output. Torah, Mais, and Tovim. They're aspiring to Tzor HaChaim. They reach Tzor HaChaim. But, and this is what makes this piece so universal for the Nativ, Gentiles are also participating in this fourth category. They're included in this fourth category, Tzor HaChaim of Pras. So it's really a fascinating Nativ. Obviously, it's a little dated, given the way he refers to class systems, and especially towards people of black skin. But it's only a Nativ that helps us read the four rivers with more metaphoric inclination or intonation, and not as four rivers that we're actually trying to trace.